on. Aman Twizy.
You're listening to Ithaca Now, WICB's weekly news program focused on stories in the Ithaca community. I'm your host, Inbainian Burson, and thanks for joining us. On tonight's show, we're going to hear from Noah Darling, who had the opportunity to attend the commemorative rally marking 25 years since the march and sit-in of Egbert's Student Union conducted by members and allies of IC's then-known Afro-Latin Society. But first, here's your community beat.
On Tuesday evening, Ithaca City School District Superintendent Lovell Brown proposed a draft budget to school board members that includes a 7.8% increase. Ithaca City School District officials have stated that the main motivations behind the budget increase are rising supply costs, varying student needs, and contractually obligated wage increases for district employees. Almost every district within Tompkins County will be relying more heavily on public funding in the coming year, as low enrollment rates across the county are expected to reduce state funding. The proposed budget still needs to be approved by school board members at their April 16th meeting before facing the public for final voting during this May's school board elections. Teachers employed by the Trumansburg School District may also be facing the effects of reduced state funding, as up to 7 teachers could be fired before the end of the school year. District administrators presenting the proposed layoffs as part of district-wide budget cuts explained that even without the loss of state funding expected, the district would still be in a dire financial situation, as enrollment over the last 4 years has dropped by the equivalent of an entire grade level. The Trumansburg School Board of Education initially planned to vote on the budget cuts at their March 20th meeting, but decided to postpone the vote until April 16th. On Thursday evening, Dryden Central School District Superintendent Joshua Basigalupi announced via email that no classes would be held the following day due to threats made towards the district. The announcement emphasized that no individuals or specific schools were named in the threatening statements reported to school officials. All classes were canceled district-wide on Friday while New York State Police began their investigation of the threats. For Ithaca Now, I'm Malcolm Alexander.
You're listening to Ithaca Now. I'm your host, Inbainian Burson. This past Monday, Noah Darling had the opportunity to attend the commemorative rally of the march and sit-in organized by members of IC's then-known Afro-Latin Society.
On Monday, March 25th, 2024,
Ithaca College hosted a commemoration rally to remember an impactful time in the history of the college that happened over 50 years ago, a march and sit-in on April 9th, 1970. That would bring 40 students into the office of college president at the time, Howard Dillingham. This was organized by the then-known Afro-Latin Society, also known as ALS, who were very frustrated with the college administration at the time. The student-run newspaper publication known as the Ithacan would note that the students marched from what was formerly known as the Egbert Student Union, which is now the campus center of the college, and traveled to Job Hall, where the president's office resided. Over 300 students will be outside of the Egbert Student Union to support the cause. But inside Job Hall, the students that were part of ALS tried to talk to President Dillingham about recent changes made on the campus that didn't support program funds known as the Education Opportunity Program. The ALS would note the program that had the funding cut helped out a lot of people from diverse backgrounds, such as Latino and Black students, that may not have had the same funds as others to attend a four-year institution. Cutting funding for this program would have eliminated a lot of opportunities for diversity on the campus. The sit-in was only the start of events that the society would do, as more would come in the next 6 days that proved the point of these students were fed up with the discrimination on campus. The ALS would forever pave the way for change at Ithaca College, taking charge on creating a safe space for students of diverse backgrounds and motivating the creation of a plethora of resources for said students to be supported by the administration. The college welcomed back over 30 alumni for this event on March 25th that were part of the demonstrations organized by ALS through the 1970s and 1980s. As they started with a commemoration event led by three gentlemen from the Ithaca College class of 1971 and 1973 that helped start the Afro-Latin Society. Upon coming into the conference room located in Job Hall around 3 o'clock on that Monday, I was welcomed by staff who seemed very excited about the discussion to come soon, as many alumni were happily reconnecting with each other in the room as well. There was a poster for the event in the corner of the room as we awaited the guest speakers. A quote on that poster struck my eye, one by Sankofa, which stated, "Always remember the past, for therein lies the future. If forgotten, we are destined to repeat it." Then the guest speakers arrived for the first event. Dennis Byron, Stephen Centeno, and Vernard Macbeth, all gentlemen who were there for the start of ALS, who had a lot to say as they were honored back at Ithaca College. The moderator for the events that would happen that day, Sean Bradwell, introduced the guests as the commemoration started.
First of all, thank everyone for your patience. This is not just a historic day, it's a long day, and it necessitates this amount of time for us to do this kind of honoring in the correct way. If I'm not mistaken, and this is partly why we have these sorts of events, my understanding is that President's office was back that side, that this conference room has always been here, but the actual President's office has been reconfigured in this space. That's correct.
So pretty much, we came through that. Is that where we've always been there?
Yes.
That's where we came through.
Yep. So we are in Hollow Brown for a number of reasons. My name is Sean Eversley Bradwell. You are not here to hear from me. So I just want to welcome folks, and I'm going to pass it off to one of our additional amazing alumni, Tanya Hutchins, with IC Unity. Tanya, please.
What I have heard and read, the second week of April 1970 was a busy week at Ithaca College. On this campus, it was loud and eventful. The Ithacan covered it all, especially the sit-in here at Job Hall inside President Dillingham's office, which looked much different than it does today. The layout was more open. The Ithacan wrote about the issues that shook the Ithaca campus for 6 days beginning April 9th. The Afro-Latin Society presented President Dillingham with 12 demands, and one read a new budget be established that would meet the EOP financial needs as proposed by the director. EOP was the Educational Opportunity Program, and it was a program that was part of the Ithaca College financial aid programs. And this provided my scholarship to Ithaca College from 1985 to 1989. It made my education and my degree possible. The actions of April 1970 paved the way for the Center for the Study of Culture, Race, and Ethnicity, CSCRE, for the BIPOC Unity Center, for the MLK Scholar Program, and any other program that aims to empower students of color at Ithaca College. I'm thankful for those actions 54 years ago, because without them, I would not be standing here before you as an IC alumna. The IC campus is a microcosm of the country and the world at large. Although at times it may seem like a bubble, students, faculty, staff, and administrators feel the same emotions as those off campus, and we want the same respect and dignity that we deserve. Whether you graduated in the 70s, 80s, 90s, or 2000s, we are all building community and a sense of belonging. We are ambassadors for social justice, proud to see so many student organizations carrying the torch for positive social change. We are so glad that there is a major in race, power, and resistance. Each class looks back to what came before. We learn from the past, especially when it is so different from our current experiences. As George Santayana wrote, those who cannot remember the past are condemned to repeat it. We remember the past today to make the future better and brighter for those who walk in our footsteps. Alumni, we honor you, we thank you, and we are so glad that you are here today on the Ithaca College campus.
Tanya B. Hutchins would go on to introduce the great alumni that would recollect what would happen on the day in commemoration, for Dennis would be the first one to start.
This is a very cathartic day in many, many ways. First of all, I appreciate the invitation and the conversations leading to today. I got to know Rodney. Mm-hmm. And I got to know Quincy, in a way that's very, very different than I probably will get to know any of you. Very candid conversations about what took place here. And our ability to be able to share with you our recollections of that day, but even more importantly, what led up to that day. How did we get here? And so as I thought about being here today, and I didn't really know the setting or whatever it's going to be, I just started writing and I stopped at 42 pages. Handwritten back to back. But that was the cathartic part for me. I needed to get that out before I got back on this campus. We're going to talk about real stuff. And our hope today is that we create a baseline of honesty and candor, that we no longer put stuff under the rug. When you bury something alive, it stays alive.
Dennis would go on to talk about how his experience at Ithaca College, particularly as a transfer student from the University of New Mexico, shaped a different way of living on the campus as he arrived at the school.
So, you know, we had that to rely on, those mature women. They were very mature. And then, of course, we had our energy, and we kept some great people also among us. So, you know, we had a chance to grow individually, intellectually, academically, socially. And it left us with a pathway for success. So we got to give Ithaca College credit for giving us the impetus to move forward as individuals, collectively, and professionally. We did very well professionally in that group of students. Can't tell you where they are today, because they're everywhere, doing whatever they want to do because they could do it. And so today is our chance to sort of bring things to the forefront. I remember I did work at Cornell. Frank Rhodes would always say it's not the end of the beginning, it's the beginning of the end of crap. And we're not going to have it anymore. And if you don't want to hear the truth, please leave. Because we're going to tell it. Today is the day.
Stephen Centeno would go on to share his experiences about the events leading up to the day of the sit-in.
I want to reiterate something, and you know, I said this earlier. You know, we did not come here as provocateurs. We came here, as Dennis has said, to engage in a community, a well-being, an improvement of ourselves, because we came from the inner cities. And we are, as a group, looked down upon even by our own people who have more than what we have. We proved that indeed, when I got an A in class, it was the same A that white boy got, or that black boy got, or that Latino boy got, you know, or the Asian, whoever it was the same material. I was impressed with Saga back then. Saga was the food service for Ithaca College, and I said this earlier. They used to serve steak twice a week, Wednesday and Saturday. And I lived off campus in Valentine. The college owned it back then. And they offered lobster. Here I'm coming from the inner city. Hot dog, 15 cent, slice of pizza.
White Castle.
And I'm here. And now all of a sudden, I give kudos to a lot of the people before me that laid the ground for me to be able to walk on. I was able to walk through and not get scarred as much as I could have. My experience was a little different than others because I look white, but I'm not white. And I'll let you know that in a heartbeat. But I don't hold whiteness against people. It is a system. We used to call it institutional racism. Now they call it systemic racism. Some people don't know they're being racist. It's interesting, it's a way of life. You know, so these things became, you know, I became aware, and it came to fruition on that first semester that I realized that things were different here.
Stephen continued to talk about some great people on campus, but life itself was much different than his time as a Catholic student. He then referenced how this whole movement for change came about.
Okay, so now we move forward in history, and we have EOP here. As they said, it was part of the budget of the college. And there were a couple of things going on there. The monies for EOP were going to be diverted to improvement, landscape improvement.
Campus beautification.
Campus beautification. Okay, call it what you want. Okay. when we said, whoa, they were going to cut us back by close to $100,000. Back then, tuition was only like $3,000, $2,800. That meant a bunch of students were not going to make it here. They were going to cut back on admissions and recruitment. That meant also a cutback. Well, we got annoyed. And it was interesting in how it progressed, because I don't want to take up all this time, you know.
That's good.
Okay. As this thing evolved, what happened was that we realized that we had to take a position. The position was that we wanted to meet with some authority. The authority was the president of this college, then Howard Dillingham, who, by the way, when he designed the oval track was short, so the inner track was too short, the outer track was right. That's okay, never mind. he wasn't the worst guy in the world. And Ithaca College is not the worst college, it's not the pick that everybody is purporting it to be. But as it went on, here we go, and we are now at a point where this can't happen, man. You know, we're here, we earned this privilege, in quotes, to be here. We've done the work, and now they're gonna cut us back. And to use Dennis's, you know, word there, his categorization of us as city rats, yeah, you know, we were looked upon as those people. And we still are, but, you know, those people. Well, we meet. We decide to do a march. It was not a sit-in. We did not sit in very long because he would have been arrested, and who knows what would have happened. We come. We meet in front of the student union, which was then called Egbert Union. Student for a Democratic Society had the second largest chapter over at Cornell. They came over. So white folks were there supporting us. We had some Cornell students come over, and they supported us. The trouble with, you know, having black students over from Cornell is that safety couldn't tell one black person from the other person. So as they were congregating in front of the Egbert Union, we peeled off in pairs and trios to come over to the president's office.
Fernard Macbeth then began to speak.
You gotta understand who we were and who they were dealing with. They being the white administration in particular. They were not used to seeing these kind of black folks. In 1969, 70 class, was a cohort of 40 kids, mostly what they called inner city, from New York, Chicago, DC, and a few other cities, Newark and such. But what it was these particular 40 kids were highly intelligent, very good students from wherever they came from, very socially aware, politically aware, and culturally aware. And our thing was, as we evolved and observed all the kind of BS that was going on, we decided we weren't going to take it. Not going to do this to us. We were talked down to. We were humiliated. We were just, in any kind of way you think of being disparaged by administration, by faculty, by staff, and by other students.
Fernand would then go on to talk about his first experience of external racism, which happened at the college campus. Now, even in their youth, they had to deal with all kinds of bias. The men would continue to discuss their storied experiences on the campus and how the Afro-Latin Society brought them together in the midst of cultural divide. Then an audience member asked about what the protest that day in April 1970 looked like.
Well, up front, there were at least 200 people.
Wow.
Yeah. We, as I said, you know, the ALS was probably about over 40 people at that time. And we had white people in the ALS. We had an Asian, too. So it was universal. We did march from the march was not a march. As you know, we coordinated with the Cornell students. They came over, and because safety could not tell one black person from the other person, they said, well, we got all of them over here in front of the union. They say, no, you know, they're over there at the president's office. By the time they got here, We were gone. We hung out downtown at a safe house.
You came to my apartment.
Yeah, your place. 510 East Seneca Street. That's where it was. And you know, we congregated there. And you know, as I said, you know, by that night, the board, there was an emergency trustees meeting.
Marsha, the bottom line is this. The sit-in was more of a riot. Okay. To be honest, we went in there and talked to Dillingham's office.
Not with the intention.
Okay.
Not with the intention, but Camille set it off. Oh, I said her name.
And when we walked in the office, the president looked at all of us. He said, golly, this looks like a shaker meeting. You know where the shaker meeting was? So,
you know, and I remember.
No, this is one day.
That was one day.
One day.
And I remember the president and secretary threw hot coffee on Bob down.
And Jermone.
I remember Jermone.
Yeah, she took the urn and threw it at them. But, you know, by then, Bob Dowell and Mike Williams had torn the bookshelves off the walls. More than one bookshelf. Off the walls. And things were flying all over the place. And so, again, you know, they thought with SDS was over there, Student for Democratic Society, who were known to bomb places and what have you. I don't know if as I said, the second largest chapter was here. So they all, like I said, were there. And we had quite a few people. Like, as in Cornell, when the straight takeover, there were white people that supported those students over there at BSU. You know, so. Now, I want to reiterate the fact that there were many, many good people back then, you know. They were eliminated, whether black or white, you know, they weren't seen, particularly when Phillips came in. Phillips, you know, the oil company, that's the guy who ran this place, Phillips 66, you know, business corporate model. He came in and he steamrolled everything.
After Dillingham,
yeah.
But again, the primary caucus of folks in the building were ALS members.
Yeah.
There were a number of other people on campus from the other organizations, including the FBI.
Yeah.
Who followed us around at that time. But the caucus that came to the office here was predominantly ALS.
Oh, we were all ALS. There was ALS. No one else. There were no outsiders.
So everybody who else participated were outside on the ground.
The conversation would then soon end, as a final question was aimed towards Dennis, but what he hopes for the current generation of students.
I think what I want for the students that come here, I want this college to create an environment where you are not seeking students are seeking you.
I was about to go there.
That's what I want.
Okay.
When I stood on the quad and every president had his hand on my shoulder.
You're taking my thunder away.
I'm sorry. And he looked at the quad with me and he said, Dennis, I can tell students who are Emory Oxford students. Emory has a two-year school that feeds the four-year school. He said, I can tell the difference between those students and the ones that came here for a four-year ride. I said, Dr. Laney, come on, how can you do that? He said, because of the way they carry themselves. He said that their gait, how they engage people, makes the difference between a four-year student and a two-year student. I want that for Ithaca College.
Yeah.
I want people to seek out the school because this is the best environment in the country. Because you all talk to each other, that you all make a difference, that you can walk together and be in different places and different spaces in your head, but you can do stuff collectively. That's what I want.
The commemoration event with the alumni would then come to a close, as a rapturous applause was given to the three men who spoke for almost an hour. Later that day, an alumni from the Ithaca College class of 1980, Nicholas Moore, would have a moderated conversation with the college community in the ALS Lounge, which is located in the West Tower. The lounge had lots of comfortable seating and a safe environment for any students to come and have a discussion, do work, or just have fun with peers. The walls were also painted with a mural on it, one that represented all sorts of historical significance that even harkens back to the start of ALS.
I want this to be interactive. I'm not going to sit here and talk to you guys till you're busy. for the next 60 minutes, but the one thing I wanted to do, I wanted to thank everybody who has been responsible for this weekend. Of course, Sean and Quincy, and of course, the president, and all of you guys that are part of the administration. It's really been, I've been talking to everybody today about this has been overloading for me because I'm old school, you know, I'm 65 years old, and so when I hear AAOZ and QRLLL, all of that stuff, I'm like, man, what are all of these different acronyms, and I'm trying to tie all this stuff together. And the one thing that I've heard, the central theme that I want to kind of keep in front of everybody, is that we have to maintain the integrity of what ALS is, and what it was, what it is now, and what it will become. It doesn't matter what else, I guess, comes into play as you guys gravitate towards whatever you're pushing towards. But ALS, please keep that in your heart, in your mind. I'm looking at that BBB poster right here for Arthur Ashe. And it just brings joy to my face to see some of these things. And this room has shrunk over the years. It seemed like it was gigantic when I was in here, you know.
Moore would talk about arriving at Ithaca College with his brother from Buffalo, New York, for a summer program that was going on before the college began. And when he first arrived, he found a whole new diverse community to confide in. Moore would talk about all the different Latinx people he met, along with others from different backgrounds, and he even played music from a speaker at points to evoke feelings of his time here. Here, he would find a new community in the ALS. The ALS Lounge created an ability to connect with peers. They were not only friends in that lounge, they were family. Moore called it our house.
There was an absolute community here. I mean, we had the ability to go to GIAC and to go to Southside, and we really got a chance to experience what it was like. You know, I had families downtown Boo and his family, and I could eat, you know, Fatia, you know, she was from Tanzania, and man, my God, she could cook some stuff that would blow your mind. And she had all of the tools she brought from home, so she would sit down literally on this little stool that had a blade to come up, and she would just, you know, go in that coconut, and she worked that coconut around that bad boy, and next thing you know, she had a pie, or she had bread, or she had all this other kind of things, and the milk, it was nothing wasted. All right. What am I saying? I'm saying that there's continuity in the legacy that we have to talk about the taste and the smell and the sound of our culture. The taste and the smell and the sound of our culture.
Moore would then reference what all this camaraderie came to as he recollected all of his memories at the campus.
All right. So we take that, and what are we going to do? We have a meeting. We say, you know what? We gotta have our own basketball team. That's what we're gonna do. We're gonna call it BBB. Because we were well aware, just like you gentlemen were, that there was KKK in the area. Mm-hmm. They had strolled on campus a few times. I'll get into that a little bit later. I said, but BBB is not what you think it is. BBB originally was Bajan, Bilalian, and Black. That was it. And then the sisters came along and they said, building a better brotherhood.
The memories of a lifetime, as he called them. Nicholas Moore would then reflect on the mural in the room and the reason he stood there with a sense of great pride that day. For he was the one who created it.
This mural, going into my senior year, we had a program, I don't know if it's still intact here, but it was called Peer Counselors. And those are the people that watched the kids. Basically, we were gatekeepers for these wild kids over the summer for the 7-week program. I guess it got scaled down to 4 or 5 weeks. But that was the first time they ever had two males. They always had one male and one female. So going into my senior year, was me and Tim Sears. We were the only first time they ever had two males to do it. The other challenge was Timmy had two of his sisters coming up, Lori and Robin. So now we got a counselor with two of his family members. This is real, I'm not making this up. I said, Tim, I got this idea about this mural, but I can't deal with these kids at night because I got to paint this thing. So you have to watch my back while I sneak off and come in this room. And there was another My favorite couch was right over there in front of that door where you guys are standing. And that's where I slept many nights after, because it took me 4 months to finish it. So I would come over here. There was no ladders. I had to stack some chairs to get up in the corner. It was really kind of precarious. But end tables and have people watch my back and whatnot. But there was nobody to come here. I had to take the key so nobody could come until I was finished. So I had the keys in my pocket all summer. Nobody was in the Ailes room all summer until I finished it. And I was thinking to myself, it's going to be some things that are left out. There are going to be some things that people probably want. But where I was at in my particular point in my life, this is what was in me.
The conversation would then end with a reflection upon the space by Moore.
And for those of you that are in this mindset, you got to understand, coming out the hood in the 60s and 70s to this place, it was like going to Mars. It was like going to Mars because there was nothing or anybody that looked anything like us. There was nothing culturally that we could, Shelley said it best, we created our own family. We created our own lifestyle. We created everything here so that we could exist and live. I'm going to use her words, so that we could live. So that we could flourish. So that we could plant seeds. My last statement to you is that I came here as an island. I was an island when I came here. And every step that I take, I take a look at this thing, I'm blown away that it's still here 45 years from now. And this isn't really about me. I think about the thousands of people, hundreds of people, dozens of people that have called me or written. Till today, I'll be honest with you, the very first time I had a chance to speak to the president of this college, and I think there's been four or five since I've been here, that ever gave me a positive word about the president of the journey. First time that ever acknowledged what this mural meant to her and to us.
The speech would end there. The commemoration event for ALS at Ithaca College concluded that day with student engagement in the campus center. The alumni and staff would gather in the Klingenstein Lounge to see all of the progress made by current club's representative of the BIPOC experience at the campus. And then they would give acknowledgement and honor to the speakers that were heard that day. My name is Noah Darling with WICB 91.7 FM Radio. This was the commemoration event for the Afro-Latin Society. Thank you.
That's all for tonight's edition of Ithaca Now. You can listen to all of our stories on WICB.org, and if you'd like to listen to past shows, follow WICB on SoundCloud and subscribe to Ithaca Now to hear the show anywhere, anytime. Just search WICB News Presents on your favorite podcast app. For more updates throughout the week, follow WICB News on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. The show wouldn't have happened without the support and assistance from Manager of Television and Radio Operations, Jeremy Menard, WICB Station Manager, Beck Legato, and Programming Director, Nicole Allen. Thank you. All of the music from our show's intro and outro come from Dr. Dundiff of Louisville, Kentucky. Have any feedback, story ideas, just want to say hi? Feel free to reach out by emailing news at wicb.org. We will be back with a full episode of Ithaca Now at 7 p.m. next Sunday.